Blog Talk Radio.
Blessings and greetings, greetings and blessings, blessed souls. We're alive because we're blessed to stay alive. In Torah Chaim, instructions of life, Torah Chesed, instructions of kindness, Torah Tzarachim, instructions of mercies. You're tuned in to blogtalkradio.com. We humbly suggest we're the higher inner frequency. We call ourselves Soul Class. This is Soul Class 618. In discussion with distinguished B'nai Noah, blessed is our Creator. Shalom, peace, and bracha, blessing upon the human family experience. Creator's help, we're now broadcasting right now on July 17th at 11:02 a.m. Eastern Standard Time from Turtle Island, a.k.a. the USA Unified Soul Actualization. Program content will focus on discussing a goal put forth by the United Nations 2015, namely gender equality. So the question is to be asked, can human beings who are called men and women be truly equal? Do men possess a quality not found in women? Do women possess a quality not found in men? Is there a dimension of human being existence that perhaps precludes this consciousness of gender equality? Do patriarchal societies truly work? Do matriarchal societies truly work? Call the numbers 347-838-8669. Meanwhile, the Eternal Creator bless and protect you and your loved ones. And we're just going to wind down for a second or so with the music of the Maccabees. This is Achenu One Day More from their wonderful Destination CD. Thank you, young men. And before we go further and bring in our co-host, I just want to mention the tags for today's program are Universal Creator, Divine Creator, Divine Image, Universal Redemption, Gender Equality, Gender Inequality, Human Beings Beyond Gender Comparison, and last but not least, Children of Israel partnering with the Children of Noah in order to eliminate hatred, jealousy, and unnecessary competition from this world. Joining me today are Rambam student, teacher, and disseminator of the teachings of Rambam, Maimonides, the Nesher Gold of the Great Eagle, Dennis Ryan, and author of Secular by Design, A Philosophy of Noahide Laws, Alan W. Cecil. Good morning, Dennis and Alan. Alan, Dennis.
Good morning.
Good morning, Don and Alan, and everybody listening.
Okay. I'd just like to mention today's program is dedicated as well to the ascension of the soul of my dear father, Reb Shlomo Yaakov Oliver Shalom ben Huna David. Oliver Shalom, may he rest in peace, my father and grandfather, particularly my father who passed away on April 17th this year, 2016. Gentlemen, I'd like to start off by plucking out one of the 17 goals to transform our world as brought about, manifested by the United Nations. These are called Sustainable Development Goals. And I'm very much in sync with these goals. And also I want to inject it with a Torah perspective. And of course I want you both to inject it with a unique perspective as faithful sons of Noah. So this is how it goes, blessed souls. While the world has achieved progress towards gender equality and women's empowerment under the Millennium Development Goals, including equal access to primary education between boys and girls, girls and boys, and women and girls continue to suffer discrimination and violence in every part of the world. Gender is not only a fundamental human right, but is a necessary foundation for peaceful, prosperous, and a sustainable world. Providing women and girls with equal access to education, health care, decent work, and representation in political and economic decision-making processes will fuel sustainable economies and benefit societies and humanity at large. And here's some facts and figures I'd like to share with you, blessed souls, on these matters. About two-thirds of the countries in the developing regions have achieved gender parity in primary education. And again, this is information I gather which was gleaned before 2015 when they drafted up these sustainable goals. In Southern Asia, only 74 girls were enrolled in primary school for every 100 boys. In 1990, that was the figures in 1990. By 2012, the enrollment ratios were the same for girls as for boys. In sub-Saharan Africa, Oceania, which is the area between basically Indonesia and New Guinea, Australia, New Zealand, and where the Indian Ocean intersects with the South Pacific Ocean all the way up to the southern tip of Mexico, also touching Thailand and India. Now, in Oceania as well and Western Asia, girls still face barriers to entering both primary and secondary schools. Women in Northern Africa hold less than 1 in 5 pay jobs in the non-agricultural sector. The proportion of women in paid employment outside the agricultural sector has increased from 35% in 1990 to 41% in 2015. In 46 countries, women now hold more than 30% of seats in national parliament in at least one chamber. Now, of course, we here living in the United States, aka Turtle Island, we also have seen, of course, developments that have empowered more and more women. But before we go to quoting some sources from Torah showing that there's really a tremendous equality between men and women, I'd like to turn to Dennis and then Alan about these facts and their perceptions of this matter of do they think there should be equality for men and women, and where can we improve them here in the West? Dennis and then Alan.
Well, the UN is a nice place and has great goals, but sometimes the practices are questionable. And yet, we do see improvements of equality between men and women. Would this have been the case if there was no UN or any other body worrying about it, that the equality would get closer and closer? We don't know if, from a natural viewpoint, we don't know the impact of the web and a lot of technology that is bringing to the forefront stuff that was in the shadows. But we need more, obviously we need more equality here, because to exclude women under any circumstance is like saying, well, we're going to take half of the human population and put it to sleep. We don't want to do that. We rather have everybody participate. And there's nothing wrong with ideas that women have that can mix with ideas that men have. So we weren't designed to be apart yet historically. There's been a lot of civilizations that do separate the men from the women. But do they really separate the minds of men and women because they have physical separation? So we're learning that more about why we were created as a race and how we should participate in it.
Alan?
Well, the problem with equality goes far back into Western culture. Excuse me. If you look at the attitudes that the Greeks had towards women, they were second-class citizens. And this is, and it's not just Western culture. There's so many cultures where women are, you know, basically second-class citizens. This is what they've had to fight against. And even here in America, you know, we consider ourselves so progressive and everything. Women still make less than men on the average in the same job. I can't remember what the latest pay rate is, but at one time, 7 years ago, it was like 74 cents to the dollar of what a male would make in the same job. The Equal Rights Amendment, which has been vilified so many times, it has not achieved a majority. And all it says is that there should not be any discrimination on the basis of sex when it comes to the workplace or any other function. It's a real simple, you know, it's just, I don't even think it's less than 24 words long. And that we have not passed this yet because the way our legal system, our constitution is set up, really keeps something that is so obviously practical, moral, and logical from becoming law, just shows the inadequacy of our current legal system. this is something that the Noahide movement should be pushing, the equality of women. And, of course, that's not really being done right now, but it is something that should be put on the table.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, gentlemen. Now, I'd like to start off by going all the way back to Genesis to show that there is an equal footing in the most basic fundamental level between man and woman. Now, Creator told Moses, because we have to understand ourselves that the five books of Moses, starting from Genesis, although these events occurred before he was born, they were retransmitted to Moses to write down formally. Other than that, before that, it was an oral tradition that was passed on to Adam and then to Seth and then to the Hanoch and then Methuselah and then Noah and then to Shem and then to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and to the sons of Jacob, eventually to Amram and then to Moses. But again, when it became more congealed and more universalized, because then it became, once it was written down, it was something that should not be given over to misinterpretation, where it says in Genesis chapter 1, verse 27, so God created man in his image and the image of God. Now, people will ask a question, well, why didn't he create woman in his image? However, at the end of this verse, after it mentions in the image of God, the verse recapitulates the fact that Creator had created man in his image. He created in the image of God. He created him, male and female. He created them. No one should read into it that a woman does not have an image of God. God forbid. So here we see the first point, the essential point that makes a man and woman equal is both were created by God. Okay, both were given a divine image. Now, with that being said, from the inner dimension of Torah, that it mentions here that actually in the beginning where it says in this verse in chapter 1, verse 27, he created male and female from the oral Torah tradition, that the male part of the human being, it's interesting, human being was not so distinguishable between male or female at the very existence before woman was brought out. The male part of the human being was not aware of the female body attached to him as anything other than an extended part of himself. He therefore later on feels that he has been created while the mate. Since this androgynous human was created in God's image, it follows that God, so to speak, both male and female, comprises the qualities we associate with both. A very deep point, blessed souls. We, in our original form as human beings, we were both male and female. That's something that a lot of people do not are aware of, don't think about, and it might bend some people to think about that. Now, with that being said, we see one proof from the written Torah tradition and now from the oral Torah tradition. I'd like to turn to Dennis and Alan for their feedback on this matter.
Well, Dennis? I would say anatomically speaking, when humans are born, and born is a concept here, because this androgynous concept existed in all that were born. Now, it just so happens that the word man was used when it was, to me, it should have been the word humans. Because when we are born, again, conceptually, there is no difference between man or woman in the process of being born, because they are only one form, and it's called a human form. Anatomically, we have a thing called testes. If they fall into a sac when in the process of being born, you are a male. If they don't, they stay, and they sort of shrink and get embedded in the physiognomy of the person, and that becomes a female. We don't know what separates this. We don't know what causes this difference, and we don't know what triggers it. We have many theories, many ideas, but you must remember that there are a lot of ancient people that used to draw images of humans, and some of them, when they drew it so that you couldn't tell if it was a male or a female. In the famous, mm-hmm. I think, Leonardo da Vinci Circle of Man, you will see a human figure there that represents all of humanity, but it doesn't distinguish between male or female. So, Our origin, our source is one, and it comes from God. And physically, we are all part of the same human race. If we have a gender differentiation, that doesn't change that we are original members of the human race.
Alan?
Well, dipping into some unusual territory for me, but if you go to the Kabbalah and look at the Ten Sefirot, it talks about how Hashem has both male and female attributes. And the feminine attributes are Binah, which is understanding, and Gevurah, which is judgment. Understanding and judgment, which you would think those would be the male attributes. The male attributes are Chachma and Chesed, wisdom and love, respectively. So it's more, man is the more emotional of the two. It seems like, you know, we always portray women as being over-emotional, but it is really man's passions. If you look, you know, all the wars and all the things that have happened throughout history has been a lack of control of man's emotional drives and desires. And this is why man, the male, was given more mitzvot, as you talk about it, the time-oriented mitzvot, to perform, mm-hmm. to keep him in check, to make him focus on what he's supposed to be doing.
True. Before we go further, Dennis, I just want to respond. The idea of calling original human being man, I think, is derived from the root of the word. The root of the word, Adam, is connected to from what human beings were hewn out of, Adama, the earth. And it's interesting that the word Adama... With the last letter in the Hebrew, in the language that the Torah, the Bible was written in originally, transcribed, written down by Moses, is a feminine, has a feminine ending with the hey, which has the equivalent sound of an H in English. So even though we call him man, he's called man because he was extracted from a word which has a feminine source. Now, original woman in her Hebrew name is Chava, and her name means mother of all life. So there's definitely a feminine quality which can be associated with the species of man or men or human beings because we were taken out of a word which has a feminine is a feminine expression in Hebrew linguistics, and also woman is considered to be mother of all life. But with that being said as well, that another thing that when Adam was being told, when Adam was given the wondrous gift of Eve or Chava, separated from his body, because again we mentioned before in the oral tradition that he original human being was androgynous, he described it as the flesh of my flesh and the bone of my bone. Now I never heard any rabbi speak about that the bone of Adam was the primary bone, and the bone in which Eve was formed out of is the secondary bone, and the flesh of Adam was the primary flesh, or the flesh which manifested from which surrounded and eventually manifested as the full form of Eve or Chava as being the less superior flesh. So I just want to throw that into the context to stir, you know, human thought on these matters, and going on further.
Well, Don,
the next question. Yeah, yes, Dennis.
I would just like to throw a macro idea into the basket here, and that is, yes, there are gender differentiations in our physical bodies, but our minds are the same. So it doesn't make a difference, and no one has ever proven that this brain belongs to a woman, this brain belongs to a man. So mentally, there is no difference. Physically, there is. So that has to be kept in the back of our minds as well, so that there are connections here, and they were designed that way. So we can't deny it, but we must appreciate even the physical differences.
Right. Well, this goes on to our second question. It's a very good point, Dennis. Do men possess a quality not found in women? Now, again, among the Jewish people, the Israelite people, Yes, as Alan mentioned before, we Jewish men, we Israelite men, we Hebrew Israelite Jewish men of the 12 tribes of Israel, we are more bound by time than the Jewish Israelite Hebrew woman, meaning because actually we are considered to be less of a perfected state or in a state of attaining perfection as much as a human being can, because first of all, from the beginning of our lives, after 8 days, we must have circumcision, as long as we're healthy enough to have so. Women are considered to be born circumcised, not because they're missing the male organ, because actually their organ is like the inversion of the male organ, but because they have an encompassing quality to them innately. On the other hand, by the Bnei Noach, the blessed children of Noah, and the blessed women of the descendants of Noah, there is a greater equality in the sense of mitzvah obligations, commandments, because all seven commandments, both men and women, are bound by them eternally to follow, meaning not to to bow down to idols, not to serve idols, not to blaspheme, God forbid, the Creator, not to steal, not to kill, not to commit adultery, not to eat the limb of an animal while it's still alive, a part of an animal while it's still alive, and to promote legal systems that will enforce those laws, and also to educate the populaces of the blessed children of Noah in a way that we within the Jewish population, we have a certain restriction, and not that the Jewish women have certain restrictions, because they actually are considered to be of a innately higher spiritual level than do the Jewish men. And I did not see yet where there is promoted this idea that the Noahide women or the Noahide men, one of them has a superiority in spirituality or in terms of obligations towards keeping the commandments. Dennis, your take on these matters.
Well, there is a difference between men and women that was implanted that did not happen in the Garden of Eden. There were no pregnant people in the Garden of Eden. I never heard that written anywhere. So they weren't there because God created humanity that way. But he also implanted that creation and recreation was solely a combination of the genders. There is no one gender that controls recreation. So therefore, even though women can give birth, the man can, but both must work in unison for recreation. So the connection is built in, but came after the Garden of Eden. So, humans didn't create this. Our Creator created the situation, and we must honor it. So, you know, humans are made up of let's say, male, female, and there may be others, I don't know. But we have to honor what was given to us by God.
Dennis, I mean Alan, excuse me.
Well, I think one of the problems that we have, too, is that the mistranslation of the Torah, especially in non-Jewish Bibles, they have it written that Eve was created from the rib of Adam, which is an incorrect translation. What the Hebrew text says is they were split in two, and the Adam was split. The male and female parts were divided equally. I have met people who are convinced that males have one less rib than females because of this, believe it or not. And, you know, that has, it's like a woman was created from a spare part. Well, that's not true. They were split. The original Adam was split equally into male and female, and it's only the joining of the two halves that through marriage that a person can become whole.
True. I guess, you know, for those of you who love Chinese food, now we're dissing the idea that Adam was the original spare rib.
Oh God, that was bad.
Well, what amazes me is that humans will think of their own interpretation of what God did, as opposed to just accepting it, praising it, and honoring it. Yet we have humans today who still come up with the ideas of what God intended, what God meant.
True, true. I'd like to go on to the next question that we began the program with. Is there a dimension of human being existence that perhaps precludes this consciousness of gender equality? And I would say yes. Where does this come in? Again, we're pulling from the inner dimension of the Torah, is that a human being is a dichotomy of something which is very encompassing to the human being, and that which is, from all intents and purposes, from the physical observation of human being, is in fact the human being. But it's a little deeper than that. What am I saying? Is that the soul of the human being is actually coming from a place which is such a pristine level of godliness, manifesting as the soul or with the nefesh, and the body, which, you know, we have bodies, and that's why we're considered to be living entities that are observable by other human beings. Now, what makes us so unique as human beings is that we are this fusion of human soul in human body. Yes, there is a level called soul in animals, but the level of human soul, which is enclosed in the human body, is something which enables us to have this dialogue of communication, which is a lot more, I guess I'm going to be human-centric, it is much more elevated than, say, an animal. Yes, animals for sure communicate, but they can communicate only according to the eternal design, which, of course, is perfect. But we human beings have been given free choice to exercise, how do we access and process those messages being sent most of the time covertly, and if we're privy to overtly perceive that sense of empowerment. And one of my rabbis once told us in a gathering, Rabbi David Vichten, Olav HaShalom, that when a person feels that they can do something better today than yesterday, that's called a giloy nefesh, a sense of self. Empowerment that a person becomes aware of. And so therefore the completeness of human being, whether it be woman or man or woman, is that included in human being are what is considered to be from the lowest elements of creation, meaning that we come from earth, and there's aspects of water within us, and there's also aspects of wind because of our respiratory system, and also there's aspects of fire because of the electrical chemical interactions that take place in our brain. The Alter Rebbe, the first Chabad Rebbe, identified that there's like a primordial type of spiritual fire that takes place in the human heart. And in fact, only I remember almost 20 years ago meeting someone who was involved in science, saying science agrees that there is this level of sodium that's built up in the heart, which can literally ignite. So there is this fire in the heart. I mean, you know, we hear people sing, we hear people pray, people make impassioned speeches. Really, we say his soul is on fire because there's some dimension of fire manifesting in human being, which is also alluding to the idea of a human being has this natural tendency, if their sensitivities are open, to want to aspire to beyond that which is just normative thinking, to try to make things better in this world. So on that level, we suggest that, yes, we must deal with this idea of gender equality between women and men. Women must be given greater opportunities, and men must humble themselves and still assert themselves for their own special qualities. At the same time, too, to acknowledge the fact that there's something about us which really comes before this idea of men and women. But, you know, this might irk some people. Why are you going before this whole idea of comparing men and women, women and men? Well, we will, because it is a matter of discussion in Torah. Dennis?
Yeah, well, it's a thing called spiritual equality too, Don. In other words, yes. Everybody has a soul. Most of us will agree to that because our intention. And our world is complete because we do have a soul, and that connects our human world with the spiritual world to a certain extent. Now, there is no such thing as a female soul. Souls are the same for male or female, just like the brain. Now, when you say heart again, heart, there's the same heart in every human. There's no such thing as a female heart or a male heart. When anthropologists want to go back and figure out who died of what and where and what are we looking at? They look at the bones, because the bones are a physical part of the body, and that's what's left in the earth. And based on the bone inspection, they can say this is a male or a female. But you can't look at somebody's soul to differentiate their gender, nor their heart, nor their mind. So when you get down, when you look at it on a macro level, there's very few micro things that will differentiate between a male and a female other than the physical body itself.
Great points, Dennis. Alan?
Well, you know, there are a lot of physical differences between men and women, but yeah, you know, there's some women who are, you know, large. They're, you know, strong. It makes me think about back in the antebellum South during the time of slavery, women were expected to pick cotton just like men did, and you know, they had to drag those huge bags picking cotton all day. And you know, and you look at today with women in the military, there's really very few things that women cannot do that men can't. And you know, you look at the Torah, you have people, you know, there were a lot of female prophets in talked about in the Torah. In fact, I've read some commentaries say that Sarah and Rebecca were actually greater prophets on a higher prophetic level than Abraham and Yitzhak. So that's kind of, you know, and you had Deborah, who was a leader of Israel during the time of the judges. So, you know, you have a lot of things in talking about in the Torah and the Tanakh about this kind of equality. I don't know, you know, how many there weren't too many female leaders in, if I can think about it, in other religions or other groups of people, especially back in those days. But this is something that we need to look at and understand that, yeah, there are some physical differences, but those are so negligible that to discriminate on the basis of the physical differences is not the Torah ideal.
True. I want to just amplify what you mentioned before. I don't recall, and I'm not disagreeing with you, Alan, about Rebecca being a greater prophetess than the prophet Isaac, but I do remember calling distinctly that Abraham was told by God, or Avram, he said, listen to her and do what she says, meaning she, for sure, Sarah was regarded as a greater prophetess than Abraham or Avram. And I just don't recall learning about, I'm not disagreeing with you, and maybe the future date you can point me in a source that I can learn more about Rebecca being the greater prophetess. With that being said, this is where we get into a little more, some of the more stickier issues, because, you know, I interact with many people within the Afro-Caribbean and even Native American nations or peoples here on Turtle Island, a.k.a. the USA, Unified Soul Actualization, and they really feel hurt by the concept of patriarchal societies. Now, I just want to put a little asterisk after this question, and also an asterisk at the end of, do matriarchal societies truly work? Because truly functional Israelite Hebrew Jewish society is not totally patriarchal or matriarchal. So I'm going to turn to Dennis first. Dennis, patriarchal societies, is Western society truly patriarchal? And why are so many people hurt by their, because they claim to have been hurt by patriarchal societies? If you can maybe break that down for us.
Well, you got to remember that society is a convention among humans. And how humans behave and decide how their society is going to be structured is free will. So we don't have anything that tells us that here's the plan we must follow, and you must follow a woman or you must follow a man. No, we know you must follow the human race. So the conventions that we pick up are strictly conventions. They are not really empowered by God of how we want to have a social structure or a political structure. These are constructs of humans. They are not spiritual concepts or constructs, for that matter. So that if you look in the animal world, you will find out different types of animals are male-oriented. Others are female-oriented. This goes on and on and on. So to say which one is better or which one is worse is a waste of time, because they were invented so that we could survive as a human race. And the construct or the convention that was brought about was what was best for the group that wanted to survive. So therefore, that goes back to the origin of species almost, to the concept that the best will survive. Well, if it's a woman who's strongest or the man who's strongest, and you're looking for a leader, you as a human will go with the strongest or the person that has that leadership that makes them strong. Now, they could be strong physically or mentally. It doesn't matter. We look at the human viewpoint, the winners of survival, and that's the way we go. Now, today, we have different ways of deciding that as compared to what is in history. So this can switch, this can move, and conventions are temporary human constraints.
Alan?
Well, going back to Rebecca just for a moment, I've read about it. I'll have to look it up about the source.
Okay.
As I said, there's some commentators who talk about that. But I think one of the points they made was how Rebecca was able to understand that Aesop was not spiritually worthy of Isaac's blessing.
Oh, right.
And that's why she did the whole scheme of getting Yaakov to trick Yitzhak to give him the blessing instead.
Okay, yeah, you're right. Thank you for reminding me. I'm aware of that. Rashi talks about that. I just don't recall in that context. Perhaps in the larger body of oral Torah tradition elucidations that they mention her superiority of her prophecy, prophetic powers. So, Alan, patriarchal societies. I mean, I'll give you an example that a friend of mine, a Mohawk Indian, he lives up in western New York, close to Buffalo, John Kane. He hosts a wonderful program called Let's Talk. Let's Talk in New York City and WBAI on Thursdays, 99.5 FM radio. He talks about, you know, the Native American Indians have been dominated and oppressed by the patriarchal societies as they see it as they felt that the Bible was like kind of like rammed down their throat and they were asked to drop their, you know, Native, tribal, national practices, whether it be the economic aspects or the spiritual aspects or the cultural aspects. So, you know, for them, their perception of patriarchal societies didn't work. I mean, I can't blame them. But what's your take on these matters? And, I mean, you know, are we talking about a Fred Flintstone or like a Ralph Cramden type society? What is the, if we were considered to be a healthy, functional type of existence, could you see a scenario of a healthy patriarchal society that really works in this world, that has worked historically?
I don't think so. As I mentioned before, you know, our culture is based on the Greek-Roman model, which were very much patriarchal societies. And also in the United States, the dominant religion, Christianity, really pushes the patriarchal point of view. Paul, in one of his epistles, says, you know, women should keep silent in the church. You know, in other words, they should keep their mouth shut and let men do all the decision-making. And this is what has influenced our society. You know, men are the leaders. They're the ones to make the decisions. Women should just stay in the kitchen and bake bread.
Don?
Yes, Dennis?
Maybe Paul could have kept his mouth shut and let evolve as humans normally behave. But for a long, long time, centuries upon centuries, any spiritual area was usually considered the domain of men. And even in the Catholic Church for millennium, the singing that was done on a spiritual base could only be done by men. It wasn't women weren't even allowed to blend their voice, not speak, just to sing. And to do that, I don't know, somebody came up with this construct as though this was related to God? Well, to me, that's somewhat of a misinterpretation, because to put women in the background was to denigrate them to a certain extent, because now you're saying there was no equality. But if you keep this practice up, you're left with what we have today. But those were decisions that individuals made many years ago, and it stuck. Again, we're back to human constructs and conventions. What happens is, if it seems like it's a good idea, we go along with it. But did we analyze the idea as to what should be the best results? We didn't go along with the best results. We went along with what filled our fancy at the time. And we still do that today, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm. I just, you know, as you gentlemen are talking, conjured up in my mind some things I'd like to share with you in terms of, there have been women, Jewish women, who are the exception to the rule in terms of keeping certain types of time-oriented commandments, such as the commandments of phylacteries. In fact, it's brought down from the oral tradition that Michal was the daughter of King Saul, who eventually married the emerging King David. She wore tefillin. Rashi's daughters, Rashi, Rabbi Shlomo Yitzhak, who lived about almost 1,000 years ago, who was the primary elucidator on the Chumash, who without his elucidation of the oral Torah, it's basically impossible to understand the five books of Moses. He did not have any sons, and he actually taught Torah as he would have taught if he had his two daughters, as if he had two sons. And they learned Talmud with him. In fact, some say that Rashi's explanation of the Chumash was basically to explain to his daughters in a way that they could better understand the Chumash. So in the merit of these two daughters of Rashi, that we men, as well as women within our society, in fact, anyone who wants to learn, can better access the five books of Moses, in the merit of the two daughters of Rashi, who not only learned the Torah that as men would have, they actually put on tefillin. One other example, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, the first Chabad Rebbe, I should say, Shneur Zalman of Liadi, he had a daughter, Freyd, who also put on tefillin. And generally, you know, there's been a movement the last several years that there are women who want to pray at the Kotel, the Western Wall, with tallis and tefillin. Well, you know, from the letter of the law, they can, but we try to emphasize, not because we're taking a patriarchal position, we're saying there are things that you can do that we cannot do. We cannot bring children into the world. We of the male section, so to speak, the male species of the Jewish people, you can. You're the ones that allow us to fulfill the commandment of being fruitful and multiply. So I just want to inject that in, you know, just to spur some thought. And now turn to the next question for the last question of today's book. Yes, Dennis.
Well, to me, personally, there is no male-female learning, and there's no female-male prayer. To me, it's universal, and that's something that all humans must practice. It's gender independent. So when you pray to God, you don't pray to God as though you're a female or a male. You pray to God as a member of the human race, and you're identifying our Creator, and you're looking for His help. That is gender independent. When you are learning, the brain is the same for all humans. Some can learn faster than others, but it doesn't mean that learning was designed for males or females. But if you deprive certain people of learning, then you can't expect that they have intelligence and knowledge. So I think sometimes the construct just and the convention becomes overpowering and people don't question it. We accept what was done in the past because we don't want to change. But if we made a mistake in the past from a human viewpoint, strictly from a human viewpoint, there is room for correction.
I hear what you're saying. Our last question that I'll be posing to Dennis and Alan Dennis is, do matriarchal societies truly work? Now, the assertion has been from within, say, native peoples here living on Turtle Island, aka the USA, and I've heard it from Afro-Caribbean peoples, that they are intrinsically matriarchal societies. Now, I'm not going to question it, and I will believe that this is their narrative, which they understand from their tradition. But again, I put an asterisk at the end of that question. You know, hopefully there'll be time to elaborate on this, on how we understand a society of human beings within our nation, the nation of Israel, how we perceive ourselves and what is taught in our Torah. So I'll turn now to Dennis. Dennis, is there historical fact to prove that they are sustainable matriarchal societies, whether it be in the Africa, or the Caribbean, or in the West, here on the North, South, and Central America?
Well, from a macro level, Don, this convention or contrivance as to should it be a male leader or a female leader is what we call a human construct. A human construct is temporary. God lasts forever. Humans are temporary. So if we have these things that are set up to set up our social type of things, they can change, they don't last long, and we can reinvent it. So to say that one is better than the other is like is sort of a gamble, because what works is good. What didn't work is not good. But that doesn't mean that for time everlasting. These things change just as humans change. All humans cannot stand doing the same thing over and over for a long time. We get distracted. So if you want to say that this is a bigger and stronger woman than the man, then we'll go with the woman. But if you want to say this guy looks much stronger than most of the women around, we better go with him. My example is elephants. Elephants follow the matriarchal structure. Why?
Uh-huh.
All the males, bigger and stronger, follow in line with that. Now, they pick that without thinking about it, and they didn't have a discussion. So we animals called humans also follow in that line, because we're all living on the planet. This is the design of our Creator.
Alan?
Well, I don't know if comparing a matriarchal society to a patriarchal society is really relevant. It seems to be counterproductive to the issue of equality. I think it should be a shared responsibility between mm-hmm. the two. Again, you know, bringing the two halves together. And I can't say, I'm sure there's some matriarchal societies that have worked. There probably have been some that haven't. Same thing with the patriarchal societies. But from a Noahide point of view, it should be a shared responsibility. There should be equality,
mm-hmm.
and we should be working together instead of saying, well, you know, this matriarchal society works. Well, what about this patriarchal? You know, that just seems to be counterproductive to achieving true equality between the sexes.
Sure. Now I can elaborate on that asterisk when I attach to the two questions: do patriarchal societies truly work, or do matriarchal societies truly work? And Alan just alluded to it, that in Hebrew, Israelite, Jewish societies or cultures, or wherever we've been in the diaspora, or when we lived in Israel, when we had, so to speak, our own sovereignty on the land with the blessings of the Most High, when we look back in our roots of our people, of our nation, we always refer back to our matriarchs and our patriarchs. So the archetype of our society, our nation, our culture, is father-mother symbiotic relationship, going back to the original symbiotic relationship of Adam and Eve, Adam and Chava. And we, you know, I've seen where, you know, in speaking with Afro-Caribbean women, that they run the household and they do the yeoman's work. But it's extremely stressful, as I've seen as well within not as much, say, like within the Jewish Orthodox community, where sometimes the father has to be Mr. Mom. They do the yeoman's work, but it's extremely stressful. You know, and we bless all couples, men and women, women and men, that their relationship between themselves should be so functional that they are able to share the burden, where the man has to ratchet it up, he will ratchet it up. Of course, obviously, the woman ratchets it up when she's pregnant and when she's nurturing the child after the child emerges from her womb. But my question to you, gentlemen, as we come to the waning moments of today's program is, you know, the idea of inequality and pain America, do you think that was a overt or covert message to women we'd rather you stay in the home. And just women became so assertive that they pushed this issue to the forefront because, you know, in Torah, a person must be paid the proper wages. I don't recall seeing in Jewish law where you are mandated to pay a Jewish male more money because he's a male, as opposed to a female Jewish, a Jewish female, if they're doing the same work, why he should be meritorious to make more money in order to send a message to her that she should be staying home and just making babies. Dennis?
Well, I go back to the origins again, Don, because that's what I live, that's what I believe we live under the umbrella of. What Hashem did is what to be honored. But when people take the human construct of male-female and try to apply it to our Creator, I think this is going a little too far, because in God, there is no male or female. God is God, one entity. One entity created our image. How we survive and how the test goes on in this planet is not a reflection on what God is. So even though we have human problems, that does not interfere with our spiritual well-being. We cannot take human problems and superimpose them on a spiritual world. Some people have tried to do that because they're trying to resolve this thing of quality inequality. If it's a human problem, keep it as a human problem. We can solve our problems because we can always change. So that's my final thought on this subject. Thank you.
Thank you, Dennis. Alan?
Well, I think I mentioned to you the other day, under Torah law, women have always been able to inherit property. They've been able to run a business, make contracts. These were things that women could do in Judaism for the last 3,000 plus years that have only been recent developments in Western society. I mean, even here in America, women haven't even had the right to vote for 100 years. It was less than 100 years ago when women finally achieved the legal right to vote in elections. And there's so many things in our society. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie that came out back in the 90s called Shakespeare in Love.
No.
You know, it just illustrates that, like during Shakespeare's day, women weren't allowed to play the female parts in the plays. They had to be young males. Huh. They weren't even allowed to be on stage. They had young boys dressed up as women to play the women's role. I mean, this is our society has discriminated against women for so long. I mean, this is, from all of Western society. And it's taken time, but this is something I think that the Noahide movement should really put on the table, come to the fore, make an important issue of, in order to expand the message of what the Noahide law is about.
Beautiful. Thank you, Dennis. And I'm thinking of one particular incident in the Torah, and I can't quote the verse for you, but I'm perhaps you gentlemen will recall that they were the Benos Tzalafcha. These were the daughters of a certain man who actually gathered in wood on Shabbat and unfortunately had to lose his life because Moses told them not to do it. God told Moses to tell the people not to work on Shabbat, and this Israelite did so. And Tzalafcha did not have any sons. And the daughters of Tzalafcha, he had five daughters, they went to Moses, the mighty Levite prophet, and said, well, our father did not leave any sons. So when it comes to the time of inheriting his wealth, he did not make it to the land of Israel, obviously, because he was given a death penalty in the desert. The daughters petitioned that they should be given the portion of the father, not that it should go over to her father's brothers or their husbands. And Moses went to the Mosai and said, they are right. So we see back then property rights are explicitly mentioned that women should inherit from their father as opposed to splitting it up with their brothers. Or say like the Torah tradition, the oldest son, the firstborn, gets basically a doubled portion, and then the remainder is split among the surviving siblings. So there is a open example of the ability of women to get their full rights. Now, you might ask the question, what about the firstborn girl? Would she get a double portion? To my knowledge, she does not, but that's a discussion which you can take up with a more learned person than myself on this matter. Well, that being said, gentlemen, I'd like to thank you. We've coming to the close of the program. I think it was a very vibrant presentation, and we didn't bring any solutions to the table as much as hopefully we offered some fertile food for thought for those who are listening in live and those who will listen in onto the archive version. And before we sign off, I'd like to ask you, Dennis, any words of wisdom you'd like to impart to our blessed listening audience around the world listening live or hear you on or hear us on the archive version?
Yes. Before you start pointing the finger or looking at injustices all over the place and rationalizing things, you must take care of yourself first. And if you are a good, clean, righteous person, you now have a basis to work off and to show your neighbor. So whether your neighbor's male or female, it doesn't make any difference. What is right is right. What is wrong is wrong. And you don't need an excuse to say, oh, I'm this gender or that gender. Before God, we are all equal, and no excuses are accepted.
Amen. Alan?
Yeah, the chapter that the daughters that you were talking about is Numbers 27. And Moses didn't have the answer. He had to go, he asked Hashem, and it was Hashem who told him, yes, they are correct. They can inherit the property. So that is a chapter for people to read and study.
Right, and to get out of this idea that biblical perspectives are patriarchal and male-dominated, domination-oriented over women, we see the women get their share as well. Ladies and gentlemen, and gentlemen and ladies, we're concluding now. I just want to end the show with a humble suggestion that whenever we try to end today's program, we try to do a little spiritual charity, which is something that all human beings should accept upon themselves. The nation of Israel has the obligation of charity. And though it's not specifically commanded to the children of Noah, the sages of Israel are saying that it only makes good sense that the children of Noah also get engaged in charity. And it doesn't matter what denomination, religiously speaking, you're a part of. So I'm going through a street map, one program at a time, when I do this series on in discussion with distinguished B'nai Noah, as I did with my two distinguished guests today, Dennis Ryan and Alan W. Cecil. It comes from a map called Street Smart NYC, a map of free meals in Manhattan. And those of you who are listening in the New York City area, if you know a person who happens to live in the upper section of Manhattan, up here in Washington Heights, in the Washington Heights Inwood section, Monday through Friday at 1 p.m., and I have to give a caveat, this is not the serving of kosher food, so for the B'nai Noah, this is something certainly they can partake of, those who are in need. I mean, I hope no one's in need, but the fact that it's such a meal kitchen, a food kitchen, people should take advantage of it. And so I want to promote the idea that for those living in the upper part of Manhattan or know someone who lives over there that's lacking in food and is a Ben or Bas Noah, there's the Church on the Hill Older Adults Luncheon Club. It is located on 2005 Amsterdam Avenue, which you can access through the C train. It's located at 163rd Street. And again, it's 163rd Street and 2005 Amsterdam Avenue. Monday through Friday at 1 p.m., they serve, hopefully it's a nutritious, warm, or sometimes maybe even a cool dish, for $1.50 apiece. And I must qualify, this is for human beings who are 60 years and older at the Church on the Hill Older's Adult Luncheon Club, located at 163rd Street at 2005 Amsterdam Avenue. And with that being said, blessed souls, we're going to conclude with some a cappella music where the musical instrumentation is provided by the agency of the beautiful human voice by a bunch of young human beings, yeshiva students, and the end led by the composer of the song, Ariel Goldwag. But before we do, I want to mention that hopefully we'll continue our efforts here on Blog Talk Radio. I've been taking a lot of breaks lately because of family matters, and it's all been for the good. Gamzu Latova, all this is for the good. I just want to mention that we should conclude our efforts and continue our efforts in a way of Ahavachad, one love, Goralachad, one destiny, Kulam for all of us, Badarchi Nom Darchi Shalom, in a pleasant and peaceful way, Lahamshich Bezerm Yisbreik, to continue with the help of the Most High. And I want to remind every one of you, and remind myself before anyone else, we've got to be good. We've got to be good because it's the nature of the good to do good. And the Creator is the source of us. who is the source of our perfect design. Even though ourselves we know we're quite imperfect, that's okay. Just go out and make it a day for someone else by thinking good about them, speaking good to them, and whatever you can do is to try and make their day better. And then all of us can finally sing out, as this song proclaims, he's finally here, the Mashiach, the Messiah has come, Hor Arat, Torah Chadasha, Mitzei Teitzei, a new insights into Torah that not even the likes of Moses and David and Solomon, all the great sages of Israel and the great sages of the children of Noah have never accessed. Let's get ready for Mashiach and all sing together, he's finally here. Ali Goldwag. Take care, everyone.
Because